Pseudopod, number 111, that's 111. Radio Demonology, October 10th, 2008. Welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Ben Phillips, your editor. This week we bring you the refreshingly candid account of a modern medical professional. The story is called Radio Demonology, a previously unpublished work by a writer named John Madai. It's read for you by the comforting and familiar voice of your usual host, Alasdair. Maybe that'll take the edge off of it for you, because it's a bitter little pill. I hope you're seated comfortably and braced for the news, because we've got a diagnosis for you, and you're not going to like it.
Okay. I first discovered the existence of the human soul while examining the x-ray of a broken clavicle of an ugly boy named Peter Dimitrios. Peter, who was the kind of kid I think of as a fly-torturing, spaghetti-bellied, dirty-fingernailed, nose-picking little crap of a little boy, had landed on a trampoline wrong and sustained a multiply displaced, comminuted fracture of the collarbone. I was examining the film as Peter blubbered hot, chubby tears onto the radiology department's antiseptic floor, and I was telling his fundamentally unattractive mother, "It's a real nasty one, Mrs. Dimitrios. Peter is going to be a candidate for what's called open reduction / internal fixation surgery." "Yes, Mom, we're going to have to open him up and install some hardware in there, probably about 10 screws or so directly into the bone. It's a heck of a doozy, Pete. Maybe the worst I've ever seen." Peter sobbed like he was trying to win a prize. It wasn't the worst I'd ever seen, of course. I've seen much worse. I've seen the consequences of thresher mishaps on the human frame. I've seen spines turned into a fine, chalky powder. I've seen explosive-tipped slugs turn the internal organs into a rude stromboli, but I really, really did not like this kid. "It's okay, Petey," his mother whispered, her eyes pink like a lab rat. She was calculating big, unfavourable equations in her head. They had no insurance. Their intake sheet from the emergency room said charity pending. She told him, "I'm sure you'll still be able to try out for football in September." "I am afraid that's just not the case, Mrs. Dimitrios," I told him, tapping the tip of my pen slowly against my nose. "I'm not going to lie to you. Peter needs a traumatic, invasive procedure and a lengthy recuperation. There's going to be permanent scarring and the chance that Peter will never be able to turn his head again without pain for the rest of his life. Yes, sir, for the next 8 to 10 weeks, he's not even going to be able to go to the bathroom by himself, and that's just the..." And just then I clammed up, because that's when I saw it. I was looking at the x-ray and saw something I'd never seen before. There, just right there, beyond the savage meathead's cracked bone, was his soul. It was just a foggy shadow at the time, a newspaper-grade demilitarized zone beginning just below the thyroid and extending two friendly ghost flanks upwards into the trapezius and downwards a tiny vestigial piggy tail under the sternomastoid muscles in the solar plexus. I was just seriously agog, and once I had seen this monkey bar barbarian's little soul, I couldn't not see it. I traced its dimensions between the exposed and unexposed portions of the film and touched, with my littlest finger, the minute national spiritual border of Peter Dimitrios' eternal essence. "Wow," I cooed at it. "Holy mackerel." "What is it, Doctor?" his mother said. She was wound up, hysterical, brittle, close to snapping, falling and shattering into several mommy-shaped shards, like an icicle on an awning when the garbage truck rumbles by. "What's wrong now? Oh, Jesus God, is it worse?" "Shut up," I told her, and snatched the x-ray out of the light board and left the room. "Now, I would like to tell you that the human soul resembles something beautiful, an ectoplasmic baby, maybe, or one of the cleaner, non-parasitic species of birds. Perhaps a dove, or a less fat swan, or a dwarfened, undangerous dollar bill eagle, or, if none of them, I guess, a tinfoil star of Bethlehem Christmas tree ornament, encircling the heart in a never-ending syrupy pledge of allegiance, but it doesn't look anything like those. No, the human soul resembles, if anything, a mass of wet leaves, the kind one finds pressed flat by speeding diesels and glued together by filthy slush and droppings in late November along the embankments of interstates at night, going from large, square, corn-bloated states to other, worse ones. It makes a kind of V in the upper chest, which could stand, I suppose, for anything. Varicose. Vicissitude. Vortex. Vladivostok. Look, I'm a radiologist, okay, and a damn good one. I've been a radiologist for 5 presidential administrations, and I had never, ever seen the faint squid that is the soul like that before. The soul had never concerned me. It's not my province, because I'm a radiologist, and my province is the skull beneath the skin. And what I like about the radiology racket, the whole game, is that I don't have to touch you. I'm a radiologist. I don't need bedside manner. I don't care about your hopes and fears, your blue moods, your perverted illegal urges, or your dripping pustulated rashes. These are not my expertise. No, what I do is shine a radioactive cancer light through you. Yes, I pump you full of barium and unstable isotopes till you glow like downtown Hiroshima. I penetrate your decay with the green ghost phosphorescence of Röntgens and shake your skeleton with my resonating magnets. I see right through you, and I do it standing behind 2 solid inches of lead shielding. This is my specialty. I, as I have said before, am a radiologist. I perform the diagnostics. I do not fix. I point the tumour and tell you whether it's the size of a walnut, or a tangerine, or a grapefruit. I tell you what's impinging on what, and exactly how inoperable it is. I tell you what's busted in there. I tell you where the blockage is. There's a sediment of toxic crud in your aorta. It's metastasized. It's broken in 3 places. There's a malignant new organism at large in your liver. It's the size of a Golden Delicious. Your trachea will have to go. You will never play the piano again. It's ruptured. It's lodged in the ileum. 1 centimetre to the left and you'd be dead. The cavity in your brain is filling up with poison. I give you 6 months to live. I give you 3 weeks. It's a miracle you're not dead already. This is what I do, you see. And I like it. Never has the soul entered into it, even once, and its first appearance deeply offended me. I stomped over to the office and slapped Peter Dimitrios' x-ray onto the desk in front of Krelby, the other radiologist on call that night. I point at the soul and say, "What the hell is that?" "What?" he says, itching his idiotic Karl Marx beard that I've always hated. It's discoloured under the nose to the shade of an infected ganglion cyst and disgusts me. "What's wrong? The developing fluid futzed up again." "There, look," I say. "You see a shadow? Here and here, like this." "I don't see anything," he says, the goon. "What are you talking about? It's a nasty break, though." He couldn't see it. It was right there, and he couldn't see the damn thing. Now, Krelby is a moron, and he should be sterilised, but he knows how to read an x-ray, and yet he is blind to the soul. He is soul blind, and I, alone among radiologists, among everybody in the history of the planet, until exactly right now, I am the only one with the sight who can see what was there the whole time. I'm a radiologist. I can see your goddamn soul. For months after, I see the souls of everyone I x-ray, in the chest anyway. Sometimes, even if it's a splintered patella or a hairline fracture of the wrist with accompanying deep vein thrombosis, I'll x-ray them in the chest anyway, just to see. And they all have them. It's amazing. Every sap who wanders in here, bleeding on the linoleum, has got one. Every illiterate Medicaid sponge, every obese, overstuffed boob, every dying one of them has got one of these things inside. I have found that the size of the soul varies greatly and with no sense of order. Usually, it's the size of 2 human hands making the shadow of a seagull on a bedroom wall. But sometimes, it's huge. Last week, the police brought in a convicted mass murderer from the state penitentiary in Marston. He had chronic chest pain, so I lit him up, and when I got the films back, the chains on his arms shone out in stark white relief, and I saw that his soul was massive. The size of a manhole cover. Its protuberances stretched up over his tattooed shoulders, and then swooped behind him to his scapulae. This piece of trash had killed 4 people, they said. One of them with a candlestick, like in an Agatha Christie story of all the stupid things. And still, he had a gigantic soul. Really, a sack of crap like that. Another time, I x-rayed a reverend that runs an inner-city mission, does these anti-drug programs for youth in need, teaching crackheads and gangsters how to paint watercolours and play volleyball or some silly crud like that. itsy bitsy teeny weeny dinky little soul. I mean it, size of a couple of baby carrots. If it was a tumour, he'd have had nothing to worry about. And then, one day, one of these schmoes comes in, had slept on a grape in the produce department of an alpha beta, broke two ribs in his xiphoid process. Average guy, I guess. Looked a little like Tom Bosley, harmless as a mashed potato. Probably collects shot glasses from all 50 states or authentic Indian arrowheads. I'm sure he said he worked in refrigeration or something. Anyway, no soul. Honestly, none at all. I looked for about an hour, even took a second set of x-rays on the pretense that a third rib might be looking iffy, but no, it just wasn't there. It's one thing to have a tiny little soul. Hey, it happens, nature is cruel. But no soul? There is something drastically wrong with that. This character, this Tom Bosley arrowhead-hoarding son of a bitch, was not just an aberration, a birth defect, or a congenital disorder. Not a sadly fatal malformation, no. This was different, and I was sure of it. And all at once, yes. This miserable bastard. He was a demon. When I passed him in the waiting room, him holding his ribs and huffing, I felt the oozing mucus of evil emanating from him, and I crossed myself involuntarily. An old, hardwired act, although I have not been inside a church for 24 years, and believe that God is, if anything, the dumb, nameless intention in the core of a germ, or a mutant cluster of cells, or just a fleeting thought that is fired between neutrons that are dying stars deep in the constellation of Hydra. That guy scared the hell out of me. I did some digging back in the records department. I went through a decade of the hospital's old files and found that about one in every 500 people is like this, a demon. They walk among us, these hellspawn impious devils. Do they cause all the world's ills, these soulless untouchables? I don't know. Maybe. Probably. But I hate them. Worse than anyone else. I made some copies and have a great big manila folder of every demon in the country. I have marked their last known addresses with red pushpins on a map. They are everywhere. They could rise up one night, all with one word from Satan, and slaughter us in our sleep, could extract the thin, squashed yolk of our souls from us and eat them. That's just what they'd want, these demon no-good nicks. Action must be taken, I think. Congress is not going to do a single damn thing about this. Only x-rays can prevent this abomination upon the earth. Salvation through radiology. And then, inevitably, tonight, as I knew I'd have to do sometime, I x-rayed myself, just to make sure. I know. And I know you know. I stood in front of the scintillator plate, I took my rings and belt off, I emptied the change from my pockets. I know, I know. I thumbed down the button on the extender cable in my hand and turned it on, and there was a low, insectile buzz as the photons shot into me and out of me. I know already. Believe me, I know. I developed the plates with my jaw clenched and my sphincter as tight as a wet knot. I knew even then. I didn't cry when I saw. I knew it. There was nothing on my x-rays. I have no soul. I know that I'm a demon. I hate being a demon. So here I am. Here on the slab, I've put on a face mask and have scrubbed thoroughly. Radiology does not lie, but it can't be true, can it? I have to have a soul. I enjoy music, I really do. I might not be a soulful person, I know that. I never said I was, but still, I have to have a soul. I've syringed my chest full of good, sweet, narcotic cocktail, and I feel tingly all over. I have requisitioned operating room number 5. I have locked the door and wedged a heart monitor under the handle. I have to make extra special sure. You see that, don't you? I've made an incision, Y-shaped and deep, over my sternum. It feels like nothing. I'm not supposed to be doing this. I'm a radiologist, for the love of Pete. Cutting is not my job. I leave that to the crude surgeons. I haven't dirtied my fingers in warm, bubbling organs since med school. I told you I don't like to touch, and I don't like to cut. I peel the skin on my chest back and pin it down. Scalpel, please. The lights in here are really, really bright. You cannot imagine. The electric bone saw winds in my hand like the mean primordial mother of all mosquitoes. Slowly, I cut my own breastplate in half. Gosh. This hurts like hell. I'm sure I have a soul. I'm not a monster. I refuse to believe that a man who flays himself alive just to prove that he has a soul is capable of not having a soul, right? I think my blood pressure is dropping fast, or rising fast. It's hard to tell, as the machine that monitors it is upside down from where I'm lying. Insert the ribcage expander. It's heavy as a goddamn cinder block. I'm sweating like a pig. They're pounding on the door now. They see me through the glass. Look at me. I've got spirit. Yes, I do. I've got spirit. How about you? I will require a large amount of gorse. I crank the wheel on the expander and briefly see God in the form of a great fish swimming through the molten lava stomach of the continent. I scream. I have to work fast as I don't have much time and muddy my hands in blood inside me. It has to be there. I don't care how small it is. Anything, anything. As small as a blackened wad of gum on the sidewalk in front of a movie theatre. As flat as a railroad track dime. As thin as a playing card. With all the wax worn off from 10,000 games of hearts. It doesn't matter. Just be. And oh, there it is. There it goes.
An admirable effort. If only more snarky, callous physicians had such dedication. Oh well, at least he spent his last moments in the care of a doctor he felt he could trust. I wish I could believe that there are very many people who become doctors in order to help people. In college, I met pre-med undergrads now and then who were attending Emory University, a major player in medical research, and although they comprised a statistically insignificant sampling, let me tell you, I would not exactly have characterized those kiddies as humanitarians in training. Doctors and lawyers often get mentioned in the same breath, and just as often go to the same school for their undergrad degrees. And what else do they have in common? Our futures are in their profit-motivated little hands. Comforting, isn't it? Sponsorships notwithstanding, we still rely primarily on your donations to pay our authors and meet our hosting costs. So if you like this story, please blog about us, tell people about us, and if you really liked it, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. It is much, much appreciated. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Share it all you like, just please don't alter the files or make a profit off of it. And Pseudopod would like to know, do you just sit around reading Guns and Ammo, masturbating in your own feces? You ever just stop and go, wow, it is amazing how fucking crazy I really am.